Hello, this is Dr. David Jockers, and on today's video, I'm talking about how to optimize your glymphatic system to detoxify your brain. And this is so important for good brain health, for good healthy mood, healthy mental energy, really great memory, and obviously preventing any sort of brain-related diseases. Your glymphatic system may be the secret key. And most people don't know what the glymphatic system is. But the glymphatic system is actually a form of basically like a circulatory or lymphatic system of your brain. You have these specialized cells called glial cells in your brain, and they actually help to, they're basically like the immune function of the brain. And your glymphatic system is like the lymphatic system. It helps to pull away damaged proteins, right? So for when we think about Alzheimer's disease, for example, one of the characteristics when they look at the brain of somebody with Alzheimer's disease, they find all this beta amyloid plaque. Well, what is beta amyloid? That is a certain type of protein that the brain makes, and it helps protect against pathogens. However, it shouldn't build up. We should be recycling it. So it's part of kind of our body's natural immune response. However, we should be removing beta amyloid through the glymphatic system. And when we have poor glymphatic flow, we end up with an overload of beta amyloid that can sit in the brain, and it causes a form of proteotoxicity that alters brain function, doesn't allow the brain to be able to heal and function the way that it should. And so when we think about beta amyloid, it's really a symptom that we have poor glymphatic flow, that we have higher levels of inflammation in the brain. Perhaps there is poor blood sugar stability. There's higher amount of toxicity. There may be a higher pathogen load in the body. And we're not pulling out these proteins, these protective proteins, out of the brain the way that they should. And they're accumulating in large quantities. And that's a symptom that the brain is atrophying and it's degenerating. So when we think about the glymphatic system, we know the brain cells perform autophagy, which is this form of self-eating where they break down old damaged proteins and recycle them and create new healthy proteins. But there's a lot of metabolic waste that occurs with this. And so then we have these special nervous system cells, the glymphatic cells, that come in to scavenge that waste. And then the glymphatic system flushes out that dirty fluid. So the glymph cells take the proteins, and they're all part of kind of this fluid, this cerebrospinal fluid. And that needs to be flushed out through the body, through the brain. And so lymphatic vessels surround the brain, and they deliver the waste to the lymphatic system lower in the body, which then cycles those wastes and gets rid of them through the kidneys, through the stool, right? Through the urine, through the sweat. This is how we eliminate toxins, through respiration. And so those toxins in the brain have to get out of the brain. Otherwise, they're going to accumulate and they're going to cause more problems. And so our circadian rhythm really impacts our glymphatic flow. And our circadian rhythm impacts, obviously, our sleep quality, our energy throughout the day, mitochondrial health. And so normally, we should be sleeping when it's dark out. So shortly after dark, we start to raise, you know, as the sun sets, melatonin, which is our major sleep hormone, is elevating. Cortisol, which is our stress our wakefulness hormone, that is going down. And we, you know, obviously that should improve our, you know, should influence sleep. And so when we're exposed to bright lights late at night, that will stimulate cortisol and suppress melatonin. And then we don't get the proper amount of deep sleep, the proper amount of REM sleep, and that's going to affect our glymphatic flow. So having really good circadian rhythm is super important. We're going to go through sleep hygiene as we go on. Symptoms of circadian rhythm disruption: you're going to have sleep problems, daily fatigue, brain fog, and memory problems, decreased sex drive, lack of motivation and drive, moodiness, and irritability. What too little sleep does to your body? We know that people who don't sleep enough, they end up getting sick more often. A study of 164 healthy people, meaning they weren't diagnosed with a disease, found that those who slept less than 5 hours per night were more likely to get a cold compared to those who slept 7+ hours, regardless of the demographics or weight, meaning that somebody could be thin, they could be young, but if they're sleeping less than 5 hours per night, they're more likely to get a cold. Not sleeping can make the symptoms of inflammatory bowel disease and acid reflux worse and may put you at more risk of developing IBD, which is inflammatory bowel syndrome. And that is characterized by things like colitis, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease. We know, again, that people that don't sleep well have depleted sex drive. They have poor vision. They gain weight. Okay. They have trouble with losing weight. They end up with higher rates of headaches and migraines and a lot of mood issues and irritability as well. And they have trouble remembering. They have trouble learning. So kids that are not sleeping well don't learn well in school. And adults who don't sleep well have trouble with work. They're not able to perform the tasks that they're asked to at work as effectively. And all of us can really understand that. And that's because the brain is not detoxifying itself. And we know the brain is very susceptible to chronic inflammation. Over the long term, chronic inflammation chews up and destroys neuronal tissue and leaves the brain weak and impaired. And so brain degeneration, by the time you have something like dementia or Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease, that is a 30 plus year process of degeneration. And we see extreme shrinkage of the cerebral cortex. We see enlarged ventricles, which are kind of the little gaps in the brain. And we see shrinkage of the hippocampus, which is a major area in the temporal lobe that is where we store memories. And so we want to make sure that that brain is really healthy, really vibrant, well hydrated, and the tissue is functioning at its best. So we need good lymphatic flow in order to, again, get rid of these bad proteins, get rid of this proteotoxicity, and allow the brain cells to undergo that the proper process of autophagy, support really good healthy mitochondria within those neurons. So again, they can function at their optimal. So when we think about sleeping, we know that the science has shown that sleep is critical for helping the brain detoxify metabolic waste. It helps get rid of dysfunctional neuronal cells. So just through the process of metabolism, we're going to have a lot of neuronal cells that become old. We call them senescent cells. They're older. They're not functioning the way that they should. Normally, when our brain undergoes this process of autophagy, we get rid of these dysfunctional cells or we repair them. And if we're not doing that, if we're not sleeping, that all happens during sleep. If we're not sleeping well, we're not going to be able to get rid of those dysfunctional neuronal cells. Sleep also helps us rebuild new neuronal connections, particularly synapses, little gaps between the brain cells. We know the synaptic density is really important, meaning the amount of these little gaps between neurons, between nerve cells, is really important for the overall connectivity of the brain. The ability to think sharply and quickly, to learn well, to process information, to have creative thoughts. That's all based around the connectivity of the brain. So really important for that. It helps reset the balance of neurotransmitters. We know that's super important when it comes to mood issues, right? When somebody has mood issues, oftentimes there's poor sensitivity to serotonin, to dopamine, right? So a lot of these different neurotransmitters, and therefore the person just feels depleted. They feel sad. They feel depressed, lack of motivation. So very important that it's helping to balance those neurotransmitters. A lot of people get really irritable because they have too much glutamate, which is an excitatory neurotransmitter, not enough GABA. So we really have to balance those. And you know, the main player there, obviously there's a lot of factors, but one of the main players is sleeping and this lymphatic flow. So super critical to support these brain cells. So again, five key things: helps detoxify metabolic waste, helps get rid of dysfunctional neuronal cells. This is what happens when we sleep. Rebuilds new neuronal connections, resets the balance of neurotransmitters, and improves neurotransmitter receptor sensitivity. You know, we can have enough neurotransmitter, but if we're not sensitive, kind of like insulin, if we're insulin resistant and the cells aren't sensitive, we're not going to get the sugar out of the bloodstream and into the cell. Well, it's kind of the same thing. If we have poor dopamine sensitivity at the receptor site, we can produce enough dopamine, but we're not getting the message across to the next neuron. So we're not getting the excitatory pleasure reward kind of goal-oriented communication process that dopamine gives. Same with serotonin, same with GABA, right? We're not getting that if the receptors are desensitized. Sleeping really helps to create this proper sensitivity of the neurotransmitter receptors and create the right balance of neurotransmitters. So we get the proper messages across and we're able to really feel and function at our best. So key causes of glymphatic system congestion, we have to look at inflammation, of course, blood sugar dysregulation, poor sleep quality. So that's super important. Obviously, that's what we've been focusing on. Chronic stress, environmental toxins, biotoxin illness. So things like mold and mycotoxins, Lyme disease can play a role there. And then also movement, right? So movement, if you're too sedentary, you're not going to get enough lymphatic flow. So super important that we're getting the right amount of motion. So when we think about blood sugar, when we eat a meal, we're going to have a rise in blood sugar, but we should also have a rise in insulin shortly after. And insulin's job is to take the sugar out of the bloodstream, put it in the cells, kind of like a key going into a lock. It opens up the door on the cell to bring sugar into the cell where it can be used for energy. We don't want too much sugar hanging out in our bloodstream because it's not doing any good. When it hangs out in the bloodstream, it's feeding pathogens and it's combining the proteins. Actually, the sugar molecules will bind to proteins and create sticky proteins, things we call advanced glycation end products. And these advanced glycation end products will actually degenerate and atrophy the brain. So they damage the endothelial lining of the blood vessels. So they cause poor circulation and perfusion into deep regions of the body. They can increase the risk of cerebrovascular disease, coronary heart disease, kidney dysfunction, because they're damaging the endothelial lining of the blood vessels. So what do? We produce insulin. Insulin takes the sugar out of the bloodstream. So we don't create these advanced glycation end products. And instead, it puts it into the cell where it can be used for energy. The problem is when we're burning sugar for fuel, that's going to create a lot of oxidative stress within the cell. The cell can only handle a certain amount of oxidative stress at a time. And so insulin, it modulates its insulin receptors based around how much oxidative stress it can handle. When we have too much sugar coming into the cell and we have too much oxidative stress occurring in the cell, we are going to have less sensitivity on those insulin receptors. The cells are going to create a process that downregulates insulin receptor sensitivity. Now it's harder for us to get insulin into the cell. I'm sorry, blood sugar into the cell, because insulin has to knock at that door louder and louder and louder for it to open up. And then we have problems. Now, with some individuals, they will still have a level of insulin sensitivity, but they'll produce too much insulin. So they have a dysregulation. So for some people, they will have hyperglycemia and their insulin levels, they won't be able to get the sugar out of the bloodstream and get it into the cell effectively. And so the blood sugar will go way up and it will stay up. But for others, their blood sugar will go way up. They'll secrete a ton of insulin, enough to get that sugar into the cell, and it'll actually overproduce the insulin. And so now they'll drop their blood sugar down too low and we get into this state of hypoglycemia. And we've probably all been there. We end up with the feeling of hangry, where we're hungry and angry. We're irritable. So we have oftentimes a headache. Some people feel nauseous. You know, we just don't feel good. And that's because our blood sugar is too low. And when blood sugar goes too low, that's really damaging on the brain as well. That ends up causing neuroexcitotoxicity and the death of neurons. And so it's really critical that we get food in our system when that's the case. And a lot of people will say, well, I can't fast. I can't go, you know, more than 3 or 4 hours between meals because I get low blood sugar. I get hypoglycemic. Well, this is an issue with blood sugar dysregulation, and we need to start consuming meals that cause blood sugar stability and the right amount of insulin to be released. And so getting blood sugar balanced is super critical. We also have to think about EMFs and just our overall EMF exposure. We know that electromagnetic frequencies can be a problem. They come from electronic devices and appliances, including x-rays, airport scanners, MRI machines, Bluetooth radios, microwave cell phones, of course. And so we've got to limit our exposure. In today's day and age, most people are being exposed to a tremendous amount of electromagnetic radiation and very little natural electromagnetic frequencies. The natural electromagnetic frequencies are very healing for our bodies. And that's because our ancestors, you know, it's kind of built into our blueprint that these EMFs are harmonizing. So getting out in nature, forest breathing, right? Just going out, forest bathing, I should say, just going out into a forest, for example. They do this oftentimes in Japan, where they take these businessmen who are stuck in a city, very few trees, very little nature, and they're stressed out, they're anxious, they're depressed, and they put them out into the forest for, you know, they stay in like a little cabin in the forest for a week or a month, and they just get out in the forest and they're around all these healthy electromagnetic frequencies. They're breathing in natural essential oils that are coming from the trees and the plants, and it's very therapeutic. And their depression goes away, their anxiety goes away, they feel significantly better, then they go back to work. Now, we want to have a regular practice where we're getting out in nature. I like to go barefoot on grass, dirt, sand. That really helps support natural electromagnetic frequencies. It's almost like I consider grounding my body by putting my bare feet on grass, dirt, sand, just getting out in nature like that, like showering my electromagnetic field. We know that too much EMF exposure affects the glymphatic system. It affects the glymphatic flow. It affects the amount of oxidative stress affecting the neurons. So it creates more proteotoxicity and limits our ability to drain and detoxify our brain. Getting out in nature, getting sun exposure, grounding our body, getting around trees and plants, and those healthy EMFs helps to optimize glymphatic flow. It helps to optimize mitochondrial function. It helps to optimize neuronal autophagy, where we break down, again, these older damaged proteins and organelles within the cells, and we recycle them. So getting out in nature, getting natural EMF exposure is super important. Now, of course, in our society today, we've got 5G as well. We really don't know overall all the side effects that are going to occur with 5G, but we do know that it increases the overall amount of oxidative damage. It can disrupt the cell metabolism, melatonin reduction we're seeing, an increased blood-brain barrier permeability. There are a lot of different issues that can take place with 5G. And so it's even more important that we're getting out in nature to help buffer, the effects of 5G and support glymphatic flow and reduce oxidative stress in our neurons. Now, here are the key action steps to improve glymphatic flow. We got to prioritize good sleep. And I'm going to talk in more detail about all these things. But to start, this is the list. Prioritize good sleep, anti-inflammatory nutrition plan, intermittent fasting for blood sugar stabilization and to increase autophagy and break down these older damaged proteins within the cells. Regular movement and exercise, so critical. That really is important for glymphatic flow. It's just getting regular movement, going out for walks, exercising, doing strength training, just getting movement. Movement is key for lymphatic flow in general, and particularly the glymphatic system in the brain. We want to reduce stress, practice gratitude and meditation. That's really important. Chiropractic care can be really key. If the bones, particularly in the neck or also in kind of the sacral area, the sit bones down there, if those are not moving well, that's going to affect your cerebrospinal fluid, which is kind of what pumps through your nervous system, your spinal cord and into your brain. And it's going to impact the amount of glymphatic flow and the amount of waste that you're able to drain from the brain. So chiropractic care can really help there. Massage therapy can help. Omega-3 fatty acids have also been shown to help support neuronal flow. Bioactive carbons can be really helpful. Fulvic acid, for example, humic acids can be really helpful here. Lymphatic system, some herbs that can be really good for supporting lymphatic flow. And then also red light therapy and near infrared can be very helpful here too. So let's talk about melatonin. Melatonin helps drive glymphatic flow, and it's also obviously critically important for our circadian rhythm. And it's produced in the pineal gland and in response to the lack of light stimulation. So when we don't have enough light, when there's, you know, when the sun goes down, for example, we don't get the light stimulation and we get melatonin production. When we have light, it signals the pineal gland, which puts the brakes on melatonin production, increases cortisol. Now, melatonin is also the greatest mitochondrial antioxidant, really the greatest antioxidant that our body produces. And it slips into the mitochondrial double membrane, where it helps to regulate superoxide levels, which is a powerful free radical. It helps to balance out hydroxyl free radicals, right? So it helps to quench a lot of these oxidative stress components that are produced from metabolism within the cell. It helps activate that lymphatic system, helps regulate the gut microbiome, improves overall immune and inflammatory process. And of course, what it's known for is regulating the circadian sleep-wake cycle. So good sun exposure throughout the day actually is very supportive for melatonin. So getting the proper amount of sun, so early morning sun is going to be more red light and infrared, right? Which is actually really good for reducing inflammation, stimulating the right amount of cortisol to give you that wakeful response. During, you know, midday, you're going to get more of the UV rays, which stimulate vitamin D production. They really help to charge your mitochondria, as does the red light and the infrared. And in the evening, you're getting that red and near infrared. And then, of course, when the light goes away, now you're going to get a really good melatonin release. So the more that you get good light, natural light stimulation during the day, it's actually sets you up for better melatonin production in the evening and better brain drainage and brain detoxification through better sleep quality in the evening. And overall, you're going to have better mood and better energy. So one thing to do at night is when the sun goes down, right? You get sun during the day, but when the sun goes down, you put blue light blocking glasses on. Blue light blocking glasses make everything look kind of red. So red light is not melatonin suppressing. And that's red light is what we see at, you know, sunrise and sunset. And so at sunset, the red light that's coming out will not suppress your melatonin. So your melatonin is going up at that point. There's less UV light in there's less blue light, UV rays coming down. And so now your melatonin is going up. Then the sun goes down. If you go back in and you turn on artificial lights, if you turn on blue lights, if you're in front of screens, things like that, without any sort of protection from blue light blocking glasses, then that's going to suppress your melatonin production. And you're not going to get the right kind of sleep and brain detox that you need. So it's really super important that you are doing something, whether it's you can get a red incandescent light, for example, that you can use if you're reading or something like that. But if you're looking at screens, anything with blue light, make sure you've got your blue light blocking glasses. There are programs, and I know they're built into like the iPhone now with the iDotFlux, where it will actually reduce the amount of blue light coming out. But even with that, there's still a good amount of blue light. So it's important that you put on your blue light blocking glasses. And what you should notice is actually a healthy response. You put on your blue light blocking glasses, let's say 8, 9 o'clock, and you actually should feel more tired. And that's actually a good thing. That's a sign that your body's producing that melatonin, getting you ready for good quality sleep. And that is what we're trying to accomplish here. So blue light blocking glasses can be really helpful. And then tips for a great night's sleep: have your room cool. Keep it as dark as possible. Use a sleep mask. I have a mask over my eyes, so any ambient light that's coming in doesn't affect me. And a sign of a really good, healthy circadian rhythm is that you should be affected by light, meaning that, like for me, when light starts coming into my room in the morning from the sun, I wake up. So it's almost like immediate, like I'm waking up right at sunrise, because my body is attuned to where when it's dark and I'm not exposed to blue light, I'm sleeping. And then when some light starts coming in, it tells me, okay, it's time to wake up. Melatonin's levels are lower in the morning. They're at their lowest, you know, and so then my body naturally produces more cortisol and it gives me that wakefulness. So that's super important. You don't want to do caffeine too late. Some people are very fast caffeine metabolizers and they can do it, but most people cannot do caffeine within 8 hours of sleeping. It will affect good sleep quality and their lymphatic flow. Now, I don't have this in here, but actually good sleep posture is important. We know that sleeping on your side, the fetal position, side sleeping, actually increases your lymphatic flow as compared to sleeping on your back or on your stomach. Sleeping on your side is what our ancestors have done for quite a long time. And so that side sleeping has, our bodies have adapted to get better lymphatic flow, lymphatic drainage when we are side sleeping. So that's key. You don't want to eat within 3 hours of sleeping. If you're eating too late at night, that is going to block melatonin production. It's going to block the proper lymphatic flow. On top of that, you may also have symptoms of acid reflux. You may feel like you need to incline your pillow more and lay on your back, which can, you know, increase, which can decrease the reflux, but also affect your lymphatic system as well. So a lot of people, when they eat late at night, that affects their digestion. And obviously it affects their melatonin as well. So not a good setup for good sleep. Get sun exposure during the day, like I was talking about. Exercise regularly, but not too late. If you exercise too late at night, you're going to overstimulate your system. So kind of like not eating within 3 hours of sleeping, I wouldn't exercise within 3 hours of going to sleep. So if you're going to bed at 10, I wouldn't exercise after 7 p.m., for example. And so that's key. And you also want to get more sleep before midnight. Okay. Every hour of sleep before midnight is equivalent to 3 hours of the regenerative capacity of sleep after midnight, meaning that if you can get an hour or 2 hours of sleep before midnight, you are going to feel so much better. You're going to get better lymphatic flow, brain drainage, more melatonin production, better human growth hormone, better fat burning, better mitochondrial producing sleep than if you're sleeping, getting most of the sleep after midnight. So going to bed early can be really helpful. I recommend winding down after 9 p.m. So you should not have any goals that you're trying to accomplish, no serious goals after 9 p.m. If you have goals, you're producing excitatory neurotransmitters, dopamine, cortisol, in order to help you accomplish those goals. So if you're like, well, I just want to finish, writing this paper or sending out these emails or working on this project, you are going to get a second wind. A lot of people will say that. I get my second wind at night. Well, that second wind may feel good at the moment. It may help you with your productivity at the moment, but it is sacrificing good melatonin. It is sacrificing good lymphatic flow and brain drainage. And that will compromise your overall health in the future. So you don't want to do that. Nasal breathing. You want to, as much as possible, breathing out of your nose. That really helps activate your parasympathetic nervous system, which is associated with resting, healing, and digestion. Nasal breathing puts the brakes on our fight or flight sympathetic response and allows us to oxygenate and heal at a higher level. It increases nasal nitric oxide levels, which increases whole blood oxygen by 15%. And so you think about that. What's that going to do? Obviously, it's going to really support your mental and emotional health. It's going to support healthy neurons, reduce brain degeneration and inflammation in your brain, and set you up for better energy throughout the day, better mental clarity throughout the day, better sleep quality and lymphatic flow at night. So nasal breathing throughout the day, doing your best when to be aware of how you're breathing throughout the day. And then at night, what I do is I just put some tape over my mouth. It's called mouth taping. And you can train your body to breathe out of your nose. And so do this for a few weeks, put some tape over your mouth, some surgical tape over your mouth at night. And that forces you to breathe out of your nose. And so you're getting that nasal breathing. That's going to help set you up for better sleep quality. And also it's going to train your breathing mechanism to breathe more from your nose. Obviously there are times where we breathe out of our mouth, like when we're exercising at a high intensity, but for the most part, we should be breathing out of our nose. Most people are not. Most people are mouth breathers, and there's a lot of sleep disordered breathing, whether it's sleep apnea or, you know, just snoring in general, that can be eliminated through mouth taping, right? Through helping the body to breathe out of the nose. Now, for some people, it's going to take some time to get used to that. However, as much as possible, you know, just putting the tape on your mouth forces you, and you could try it during the day, and that will, you know, if you're worried about doing it at night, you kind of see how your body responds to it. And then that may help you adapt and become more comfortable with doing it at night. I just started at night. You know, I started doing this several years ago, and at first it felt very awkward. but my body adapted very quickly. I would say by like the third day, it was no big deal. And I was still able to sleep well. And even on day one and two, I just noticed it, right? I noticed the tape. It felt unusual. But my body adapted. I was able to breathe out of my nose, still got great sleep. I track my sleep scores with a Oura Ring and I felt great. I felt like I was sleeping really, really well. And my heart rate variability, which is a measurement of my parasympathetic nervous system, has been improved since improving my nasal breathing. And that means that I'm getting better recovery when I am sleeping. Now, let's shift into nutrition. We obviously want to eliminate pro-inflammatory foods. That's going to be your refined grains, all your kind of grains and a lot of your starches, your processed foods. You want to get rid of those. We want to get rid of deep fried foods, packaged foods, grain-fed meats as much as possible, fast food soda, you know, things like that. And then seed oils, commercial salad dressings that have corn oil, safflower, soybean oil, cotton seed oil, things like that. We want to get rid of those. We want to focus on grass-fed, pasture-raised meat, poultry, and wild game. Lemons, limes, berries are really great for the body, great for blood sugar stability, great for brain health. Berries have oleic acid and anthocyanins and resveratrol that really supports mitochondrial health, supports our microbiome. So I'm a huge fan of adding berries into your diet. Avocados and avocado oil, green tea, which has catechins that are very supportive for good brain health. And it also has theanine, which is really good for neurotransmitter sensitivity, serotonin, really good for relaxation and sleep. So green tea can be great. Non-starchy vegetables, so broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, things like that, which have a ton of nutrients and very little amount of starch or sugar. Good herbs like turmeric and ginger, garlic, onions, chives, basil, oregano, thyme, rosemary, sage. These things help stimulate autophagy within our cells. They have different polyphenol compounds that reduce inflammation and tell the cells to heal and repair themselves. So that sort of food information, that's really the way I look at food, is it's a source of information for our body. And that sort of information tells the cells to become stronger and more stress resilient. Extra virgin olive oil, amazing. Tons of polyphenols. You have things like oleocanthals and hydroxytyrosol, which hydroxytyrosol crosses the blood-brain barrier, reduces inflammation in the brain. Oleocanthals reduce inflammation throughout the body. They also have anti-cancer benefits as well. Fermented vegetables can be really supportive. Things like apple cider vinegar, sauerkraut, pickles, things like that. Kimchi, really supportive for gut microbiome health and allowing the gut to produce the right amount of B vitamins to support brain health. So that can be really helpful. Wild-caught fish, which is rich in omega-3 fats. Omega-3 fats play a key role with our glymphatic function. It's one of the most well-studied nutrients for glymphatic flow. So getting the right amount of omega-3s to omega-6s is critical. So consuming, getting rid of all those seed oils and consuming things like wild-caught salmon, wild-caught seafood can be really helpful for getting the right amount of omega-3s, as well as grass-fed. We can get those from grass-fed, pasture-raised animal products as well. So these are the kinds of things we want to be consuming on a regular basis. Coconut oil as well, actually. Coconut oil has MCT fats, medium-chain triglyceride fats, which turn into ketones, which help downregulate inflammation in the brain and help improve glymphatic function. Ketones actually help support good brain drainage and brain detoxification. So super helpful. Getting good movement. So I say there's a big difference between movement and exercise. Movement is any sort of movement that you're doing at a low intensity without specific physique-related goals, whereas exercise is something you're doing at a very high intensity with a goal to build strength, for example, build muscle, build endurance, burn fat. Movement could just be going out and taking walks. And movement is super critical for your health. It helps improve circulation, stimulates lymphatic drainage, enhances tissue oxygenation, helps balance your key brain neurotransmitters. In fact, going out and just taking a walk is like your greatest antidepressant. Taking a walk outside, particularly in the sun, is way better. It performs way better in studies than taking an antidepressant medication. So just getting out, moving your body will help balance a lot of these neurotransmitters, particularly also moving it and getting sun exposure whenever possible. Super key here. Reduces stress. Movement reduces stress and tension in the body, improves mood and happiness, and enhances your mental clarity and your memory. So get regular movement throughout the day, and also incorporate exercise as well. Chiropractic care helps align your spinal bones, which actually provide movement information, something called proprioception, a powerful amount of it into the brain. Proprioception is movement information. So the brain's constantly getting information from the spine and from all the joints as to where you are in space. And it does that through these receptors called mechanoreceptors that are in all of our joints. And in particular, you have incredible amount of density, mechanoreceptor density in your spinal bones, in particular, the ones that are at the top of your neck, your upper cervical. And when those are misaligned, that's going to send bad messages up into the brain, messages that are not going to allow you to adapt to your environment well. And also they're going to trigger more if there's problems there, if they're not moving right, it actually increases your sympathetic or your fight or flight nervous system. Chiropractic care can help realign and take stress off those areas, which allows for proper proprioceptive information to get into the brain to allow you to know your spatial awareness and to improve all elements of brain function more effectively, and helps to improve the balance between your sympathetic, your fight or flight nervous system, and your parasympathetic rest, heal, digest, nervous system. And so chiropractic care can be really, really helpful there. I also mentioned massage can be helpful. There's other things like acupuncture that can be helpful as well. I'm also a big fan of red light therapy, and in particular, a red light device that also has infrared. That is really good for stimulating mitochondria. It's very, very good for improving circadian rhythm and sleep. Now, if you're able to, you know, get outside and watch the sunrise and the sunset every day, you're getting infrared, you're getting red light therapy. So that's great. Now, you can also buy a device. There's certain devices that will do this, and they help, you know, obviously to concentrate the red light and the infrared. So you get an even stronger dose than sunrise and sunset, which can support your skin, your collagen production, your mitochondria in your body, really great for circadian rhythm and sleep, supports tissue healing and repair. So skin issues, and also just inflammation and pain in your body. So I'm a huge fan of that. And then clinical benefits of EPA and DHA. This is the long chain omega-3 fats that we get in fish oil, for example, and in wild caught fish. We know that DHA is the very long chain omega-3, super powerful for brain health and supporting lymphatic flow. So also good for eye health, cognitive function. EPA is just a little bit two carbons shorter than DHA, and it's very good for a wide variety of things, including inflammation, keeping inflammation under control in our cardiovascular system and joints, our immune system, things like that. However, DHA is the main player when it comes to brain health. We can get that from algae. There's algae-based DHA oils, and of course, fish oil, krill oil, and then eating wild-caught fish and wild-caught seafood, great sources of DHA. You can also get it from grass-fed animal products, pasture-raised eggs as well. Bioactive carbons, they can be really helpful, particularly if you're dealing with any sort of pathogens in your system and toxins, mold, mycotoxins, bacteria, increased amount of bacteria or parasites in your bloodstream that could be affecting brain health. Bioactive carbons are like fulvic and humic acids that come from deep in the earth. And they have polyelectrolytes that really, and they're so small, fulvic acid, that it can go into cells, pull toxins, grab the toxins and pull them out. So, and it can also deliver lots of different nutrients and minerals into deep within cells. So I'm a huge fan of using bioactive carbons to help detoxify cells and to help bring more minerals, help mineralize cells. And that can help with lymphatic function and circadian rhythm for sure. Magnesium. And if there's one supplement outside of what I talked about, you know, I talked about omega-3s, I talked about those bioactive carbons. Magnesium can be really helpful. We know that magnesium really helps to balance neurotransmitters. Most people are magnesium deficient. Magnesium plays a key role in over 300 functions in the body. And when you're under stress, you are depleting magnesium. When you have blood sugar imbalances, you're depleting magnesium. So magnesium is to the body what oil is to a car. So the more we're using our body, the more magnesium we need. Most people are not getting enough in their diet. They're not absorbing enough magnesium. So taking a magnesium supplement, I would say that's probably the number one supplement that I give to people where they notice a difference right away, right? They take a scoop of, for example, a good quality magnesium product. And it's like, wow, I noticed that with my brain, just felt more calm, more relaxed. I slept better at night. I woke up more refreshed, had more energy in the morning, was able to concentrate better throughout the day. So magnesium can be really, really powerful. And when we look at different forms, the best forms are going to be magnesium malate, glycinate, chloride, magnesium chloride, magnesium taurate, magnesium orotate, magnesium citrate, and magnesium L-threonate. The ones that we want to avoid are going to be, well, at least knowing, we may not necessarily avoid them, but just knowing that they have poor absorption are going to be magnesium oxide. That's mostly used as kind of a bowel mover. It's like a laxative. It helps move your bowels. So it's fine for that, but don't think of it as, you know, supporting brain magnesium levels. Magnesium sulfate, which we get in Epsom salts, it's great to take, you know, in a bath, not good to consume. You're not going to absorb as much of that magnesium. Magnesium dihydroxide, which is the milk of magnesia. So it's coarse, you know, a laxative. Magnesium aspartate, magnesium carbonate, not as good of forms. Whereas the magnesium malate, glycinate, chloride, taurate, orotate, citrate, and L-threonate are the best. Now, L-threonate has been the one that has the best research for crossing the blood-brain barrier and reducing stress, anxiety, and improving learning, memory, and sleep. So it's the most well-studied for that. However, I will say that, you know, when people take magnesium citrate, although that one tends to be better for muscles, right, reducing muscle tension, a lot of times people notice they sleep better. They notice that they have less anxiety. So some of the other forms outside of the L-threonate can definitely improve brain health, but that's just the one that tends to work the best when it comes to overall neuronal health, brain health, and helping with lymphatic function. So that's a good thing to remember. Now the RDA for magnesium for adults between 300 to 420 milligrams daily, we typically recommend 450 to 800 plus milligrams daily for optimal health for adults, depending on age, body size, stress levels, medication usage, or certain medications, antibiotics, for example, diuretics, blood pressure medications, statin drugs that deplete magnesium levels. So if you're taking medications, any medication pretty much, taking some extra magnesium can be helpful. Many people take magnesium to bowel tolerance. So when you get loose stools, that's a way you know you took too much magnesium. So it's good to just back down a little bit, find the right dosage to where you feel good, but you're not getting loose stools. And that's really the best way to dose magnesium. And then when it comes to sleep and when it comes to lymphatic flow, I really like our Mag Sleep that you can find on drjockers.com. It's a combination of highly absorbable magnesium and relaxing adaptogens, things like wild cherry. It has got lavender in it, right? It has got, you know, a bunch of different compounds in there that support good sleep quality. And it's been clinically proven to show that. So hopefully this is a great training for you guys and you got a lot of value out of it. So, you know, please share this with other people that you know and that you care about, because optimizing lymphatic flow is super critical to overall brain and neuronal health, your mood, your memory, and your mindset. So you want to do everything you can to optimize sleep quality, melatonin production, and lymphatic flow. And you learned about that in this presentation. So again, please share that with somebody that you know and you care about. And we'll see you guys in a future presentation. Everybody be blessed.